You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
On this week's tour around the NL Central, we get a health update on Pirates pitcher Ryan Vogelsong after he was hit by a pitch in the face back on Monday against the Rockies. We'll also break down the huge Cubs and Cardinals series in St. Louis and talk about the much-improved starting pitching of the Milwaukee Brewers. We kick things off this week with Cardinals reporter Jennifer Langosch. Jennifer, we especially thank you for the time today, tonight rather, because it's been a very long day at the ballpark for you and for the Cubs and for the Cardinals alike, especially for the Cardinals. They fall 9-8 today to the Cubs. The Cubs take two or three games in that big series at Busch Stadium. But Jennifer, even though the Cubs did take two out of three, you look at the series as a whole, the Cardinals had the walk-off in game one. They really roughed up Jake Arrieta today. He only went five innings. So even though, again, the stats say they only won one out of the three games, how did the Cardinals feel about themselves when you look at the series as a whole here?
Yeah, I mean, certainly they were fortunate to get the one game, and that was a come-from-behind win as well as they hoped to get on Wednesday. I mean, I think it depends on if you want to take the glass half-full or half-empty approach. I mean, you look at the positives today, the fact that you were down 6-1 against Jake Arrieta in the second inning, and they pulled to within one run by the ninth inning, had the winning run at first base in that last inning. So to be able to do that against a pitcher who has basically shut down every team he's pitched against this year, certainly notable and certainly, commendable for this offense, the way they pecked away. The glass half empty, however, of course, is this pitching. And we saw for the second straight day here, a Cardinals starter allowing six runs in an inning. It was Michael Wacha in the first inning on Tuesday, Carlos Martinez, six runs in the second inning on Wednesday. And it's just too precarious a position to put your club in. I mean, you can't ask them night after night to try to be coming and pulling themselves out of these deficits. So, while the Cardinals were certainly riding a high after that series opening win, they say that momentum is only good as your next day's starting pitcher. And unfortunately for the Cardinals, they didn't get very good starting pitching performances in either of these last two games.
Yeah, certainly agreed. It's a mixed bag these past three games for the Cardinals. You brought up the bad innings by both Michael Wacha and by Carlos Martinez today. And speaking of Martinez, another so-so outing overall. He turns in the five innings for a third straight start. His ERA over these three starts are really bloated, 8.40. And now you look at his first four starts of the season, his ERA in those starts below two. Is this something more than a rough patch or just kind of a blip on the radar for him?
The Cardinals hope it's a blip, but you look here now, you mentioned he had such a sensational April and now five starts here in May. He's lost all five, I believe four of them. He hasn't even been able to go more than five innings, which was the case again here today. So I think there is a little bit of growing concern, especially with the way Michael Wacha is pitching, with the way Carlos Martinez is pitching. These are two young pitchers who seem to both take some nice strides forward in their careers last year, and the expectation was, a year older, a year more mature, that this would be a big year for both of them. And as we've seen this month, both have really fallen flat. So I think it comes, to both Wacha and Martinez, it comes down to being able to make some adjustments. For Carlos, a little bit of that is consistency of delivery. A little bit more sharp command will certainly help him here. You do wonder, you kind of trace back this stretch of four starts for him, and it goes back to when he caught that illness that stuck with him through a couple outings. He was sick for about 10 days. And he just really hasn't seemed to be right since then. Not to say that the illness is still affecting him now and he's gotten the strength back, certainly. But he just hasn't been able to get in that rhythm since he was sick. So, as the Cardinals look to move forward, again, they're playing with an offense that leads the National League in runs scored, yet they're one game above 500. And that has, for the most part, had to do with the starting pitching just not living up to expectations.
And that's something we've talked about at length in previous podcasts, in that it's been kind of a bizarro Cardinals season, and that in years past you've got the outstanding pitching of the offense, which has been good enough to give them 100 wins last year. The complete opposite this year, the pitching has been spot on, spot off, a little bit sketchy, but the offense has been so good. And just ask Jake Arrieta, as he was knocked out today after just five innings. Arrieta's dominance over the Cardinals has been very well chronicled over the past couple seasons, especially in nine career starts against the Cardinals before today. He had an ERA under two. That obviously goes way up after today's performance. Now, Cubs fans are going to say, well, it's just one bad outing. Cardinals fans may say, hey, we discovered something here, kind of a chink in the armor perhaps. Does the truth kind of fall somewhere in between, as it so often does?
Yeah, probably so. And you look at the Cardinals, you know, when they faced Jake Arrieta in the postseason last year, they knocked him around too. And you look at where he was by last October, he had just rolled through the season. Obviously, he had pitched a complete game shutout against the Pirates to win the wild card game and set up the series against the Cardinals. And the Cardinals found a way to knock him around. This is an offense, you know, that really takes a lot of pride in being able to grind out at bats. And we see this, you know, we see this with some of the success they've had against Clayton Kershaw, for instance, and we've seen it now, you know, a couple of times against Arrieta. So some of these best pitchers in the game, now certainly they can go out and kind of shove it against this team as well. But the Cardinals find a way to grind out at bats. They find a way to peck away. And it was really impressive because today would have been a very easy day to kind of just wave the white flag there in the second inning. Again, you're talking about a pitcher who hasn't lost in the last 10 months, who hadn't allowed more than four runs in a game at all this year. Staring up at a five-run deficit seems kind of unreachable, but credit to this offense. Again, they stuck with their approach. They've seen Arrieta enough now that they have some familiarity there that they were able to do a little bit of damage, and you're right, maybe moving forward when you face him later in the season, it's something that they can build off of.
Carrie, thank you for the time, and it took nearly 50 games, but we finally have some struggles and some difficulties to talk about for this Cubs team. They've dropped 7 of 11. You knew it was going to happen at some point. You know, they were at one time a ridiculous 25-6. They're now a slightly less ridiculous 29-13. They're still lapping the field in the NL Central, so no worries there. But, you know, there's kind of a saying, you learn the most about a team when things aren't going great. And right now things aren't going great. Again, 7 of 11 that they've lost. So your observations of this team throughout these last 11 games, what are one or two things that you've learned or that you've seen as the Cubs are not winning every night now?
Well, I think, unfortunately, when in watching the Cubs against the Giants, it reminded me a little too much about the series last October against the Mets in the NLCS. And I, you know, when you have really good pitching that shuts them down, and that's something that the Cubs are going to have to figure out, you know, is how do they beat Madison Bumgarner, you know, because a lot of people have been talking about how the Cubs-Giants might be meeting once again in October, and that would be for a little bit more than just regular season honors. It, you know, they're going to go through slumps. They weren't going to hit, you know, 500 or whatever for the entire season. I know that I kind of looked at the stats from the loss to the Pirates at home when Gerrit Cole made a brash statement, where he said that he didn't think the Cubs were the greatest team. Since that game on May 15th, they're 2-5. They've been hitting .197, and they're only averaging 2.7 runs per game. And before that, they were averaging about 6 runs per game. So, you know, the pitching is starting to catch up a little bit, and I think most people that watch baseball knows that it takes a while for the pitching to kind of catch up. The hitters sort of have the edge in spring training. Pitchers are starting to get their feel now, and Cubs have to figure out a way to beat guys.
Of course, and, you know, baseball, as they say, the ultimate game of adjustments, and now it's on the Cubs' plate to adjust. As you said, the pitching is starting to catch up with them ever so slightly, so we'll see what adjustments this team makes going forward. And, Carrie, you know, we sing Joe Maddon's praises all the time, and rightfully so. And just in reading his comments to yourself and other media members, it's really hard to tell if he's won 10 straight or lost 10 straight. And in your, you know, face-to-face dealings with him, is that the sort of demeanor he always presents, that no matter how well things are going or how not well they're going, always present this even keel to keep yourself grounded?
That's all. He takes it day by day, one day at a time. And as cliche as that sounds, it works for him, and that's the message that he wants to get across to the team. If they lose 18-0, if they win 18-0, he wants them to react the same. If they win, they get their 10 minutes to celebrate, and then boom, they forget about it and move on to the next game. If they lose, they get their, I think he gives them 30 minutes to pout, and then they can move on to the next game. So it's really, it's a grind, it's a long season, and they can't worry too much about what happened in San Francisco. That's time to move on. You've got to face the Cardinals, who are up for a little bit of a rematch. I'm sure they didn't like being swept when the Cubs were last here just a month ago. So this should be an interesting series.
It's going to be a fun one, which begins tonight, Monday night, in St. Louis. And before we look ahead to that, you know, frightening incident Saturday in San Francisco for the second time this season. A Cubs outfielder involved in a very frightening collision. This time it's, you know, Jason Hayward with the wall. I know that you weren't at San Francisco, Kerry, this past weekend, but I don't know if you saw the play as it happened. But if so, or when you did see it for the first time, were you thinking to yourself, worst case scenario? Because I think a lot of people were. I know I was when I first saw it, the way that he kind of went awkwardly into that wall. I think the diagnosis was a rib cage contusion, and all things considered, I think Hayward extremely fortunate that this was not much more serious.
I was watching, and whenever Arrieta pitches, Arrieta started that game, I was actually sitting at home and keeping score, and I know I wasn't sitting for long when Hayward slammed into the wall. It had to be one of the greatest catches I've ever seen.
True.
which is, you know, sort of sounds very morbid, but I mean, the fact that he actually tracked that ball down and held on to it is incredible. The fact that he got up and walked off the field on his own power is even more incredible. I mean, he went right into the wall. Miraculously, they say that he should only miss 3 to 5 days. He did not play, obviously, Saturday, Sunday, and it's questionable whether or not he'll be ready for this series against the Cardinals. Maybe in a perfect world, they would wait, because I know most teams, when a guy is hurt, they like to give him that one extra day, so maybe they'll wait until they get home to Chicago on Friday. But he's very fortunate that he survived. I loved his quote where he said, you know, God was keeping an eye out for him, and he's as Madden said, you know, he thought for sure that this was a head or neck injury, which would have been incredibly severe, and it wasn't. So, like I say, miraculously, Jason is alive and recovering.
You know, Mark, we said last Friday, I believe, that we wanted to have some more uplifting topics to talk about on this week's edition of the Reds podcast. But you know what? The numbers are what the numbers are. It's tough to find some uplifting things when you've lost 9 straight games as of this discussion. The latest setback Tuesday night, losing to the Dodgers 8-2. But that was the major league debut of Daniel Wright, so the numbers don't jump off the page. 5 1/3 innings, he was solid. Is this going to be a kind of a one-and-done deal for him, or given all the injuries and all the setbacks and inconsistency in that rotation, could he stick around for a little while?
It could go in one of two different directions. This kid really zoomed under the radar. He's not a top 30 prospect. He started the year in Double-A. He was a reliever. He got some starts and then just rose to the top very quickly. They could give him the one and done and send him back to Louisville. John Moscott is going to be pitching tonight in a rehab assignment along with Anthony DeSclafani. Moscott got clobbered with 4 home runs and 9 earned runs his last time out. They really wanted to give him the extra start, even though he's healthy. So he could, Moscott, if he pitches well today, go into that spot and replace Wright. The other way they could go is Alfredo Simon has been really lousy for his last few starts. Actually, most of the season would take away 2 starts. And Brian Price kind of indicated that the time for sitting on their hands and waiting for guys to get better is about over. He showed that by demoting 3 relievers last week, and now they're looking at possibly doing that with Simon. So I could see Wright staying around if they decide to go with a different route with Simon, either in the bullpen or whatever. But, you know, they really like the guy. He came up quickly, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and, Mark, to backtrack to Monday night, and let's talk about Brandon Finnegan. You know, the poor guy, he pitches his heart out, and he has the misfortune of doing so on the same night he's opposing some guy named Clayton Kershaw. I tried to think of some comparison, and the best I could do was you're in a karaoke competition, you sing your heart out, the song of your life, and you find out the other finalist for a $10,000 grand prize is Adele. So that's kind of what happened to Brandon Finnegan here. He goes up against the very best in the game, and kind of a strange outing for him. He only struck out 2. He walked 4, but nonetheless, he did have the 8-inning complete game. Are we still kind of figuring out what Brandon Finnegan is, or who he is, or who he isn't, or is he just a guy that is going to be a roll of the dice every fifth day?
I wouldn't go so far as to say roll of the dice, but he is still a 23-year-old kid who is starting for the first time in the major leagues, and you take the ebb and the flow of what comes with that. He's not going to go out and do this every single time. I will say that he's had some bad luck, because when he's had these really unbelievably strong, awesome starts, he's had the misfortune of being either against a really good pitcher on the opposite side or having the bullpen give it away and not getting the win for him. So he's been kind of a hard luck pitcher, and of course sometimes he's made his own bad luck with walks or home runs. So I think they're very impressed with him. He's, believe it or not, the only pitcher in the Reds rotation to have made every single start, not because of, you know, he's not been skipped because of struggling or because of injuries. So that's something they're pretty positive about. And if they can get him to get past the sixth and seventh inning more often like he just did, they would be thrilled. But he's someone with a lot of confidence. He's not afraid of anything. He can be a little defensive at times. He thinks he can do everything and anything at all times. But he's, like I said, a work in progress. And they're very encouraged by him.
You know, we see sometimes that when a guy is the main piece in a big trade, such as Brandon Finnegan was in the Johnny Cueto deal last year, helping the Royals to win the World Series when Cueto, you know, anchored that rotation. Sometimes it kind of messes with a guy's head to know that, you know, hey, I'm the key piece going back in this deal for a guy that this team, my former team, wants to help win a World Series. Is there any of that mixed in with Brandon Finnegan? Because as you said, he's been around since 2014, but he's still only 23 years old. Does he put, or has he put, some added pressure on himself because of the trade that happened and who he was traded for?
I haven't noticed any of that, and I think one of the reasons why it hasn't is, even though he is the most known of the three players that came over in the Cueto trade, I don't feel like he's the centerpiece of the trade. I think you look at John Lamb, who is one of the players, and I think the most anticipated now is, of course, Cody Reed, because he hasn't been up yet. He's a top prospect. And I think the three of them are kind of taking that on together. I don't view Finnegan as a guy that really spends a whole lot of time thinking, I have to do this because of this. I think he's just really focused on just taking the ball and pitching. And for the most part, he's done that pretty well. He's, you know, obviously had some hiccups along the way. He got clobbered the night that Jake Arrieta threw the no-hitter against him. But I think there's been a lot to like about him this season so far.
And, Mike, you know, this is kind of an odd statement to make based on the fact that the Brewers just got swept at Citi Field against the Mets. But nonetheless, that came on the heels of nearly sweeping the Cubs. They did take 2 out of 3. So considering the struggles that the team has had pretty much all year, could you make a case, again, despite that sweep, that this is the best baseball that the crew has played all season?
Yeah, that's a very good point, Matt. I mean, it sounds a little unrealistic to begin with, but it is true. The 2 out of 3 they won from the Cubs were huge. They only allowed the Cubs 7 runs in 31 innings, which is remarkable. And they pitched well against the Mets. The Mets are going to shut out a lot of people. The Mets are going to sweep a lot of people. We know how good that pitching staff is. The Brewers don't have that, and who else does? You know, so what you're seeing right now from the Brewers, the really encouraging development is, over the past week, the starters have pitched consistently, and they've been, in some cases, horrific before that. So there's been a huge improvement, and the game, the team lost the 3 games in New York, was in all the games, and at this point, that's a step forward.
Yeah, it certainly is, and one of the games was a David Wright walk-off. There was at least one other one-run game in that series, so, you know, a lot to build on. And was it a sense that after taking 2 out of 3 against, you know, this juggernaut Cubs team, even though they've kind of slumped lately, did a light switch kind of go off and these guys said, you know what, I mean, yeah, the record's not what we'd like it to be, but we just played the best team in baseball, you know, tooth and nail, and if we can sustain this, we can maybe get back into this thing?
I think they're optimistic about their own chances, and maybe that optimism isn't shared by anybody else, but at least they had something they could point to with that, you know, with the victory over the Cubs and the improved starting pitching. The bullpen's been okay. I mean, the bullpen's actually been fine. But, you know, they're not in a position where you need the 7, 8, 9 inning guys when you're done the lead, when you're behind 5-0 in the third inning. And that's been going on entirely too often with them. Now, this latest development over the last week gives them hope that they can actually be stable in the rotation and thus have a chance to compete. Yeah. So it's legitimate, I suppose.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a good week, all things considered, for this team. And we saw yesterday the awaited return of Ryan Braun. He missed 6 of the previous 7 games due to that bad back of his. He went 1-for-4, had a single, stole a base too. But I know that, you know, a lot was made in Sunday's game about the bloop single off the bat of Yoenis Cespedes that dropped in front of Ryan Braun. And I think kind of the knee-jerk reaction at first was, well, a healthy Braun gets to that ball, a Braun that doesn't have a bad back, gets to that ball. Ryan Braun, though, had kind of a different take after the game. He said, my back had nothing to do with it. He goes, it's Yoenis Cespedes, for crying out loud. I'm playing deep. So I tend to believe that part of the explanation from him.
Yeah, I do, too. He's caught in between there, basically. Didn't know whether to dive, slide, or pull up. In retrospect, he should have pulled up. He didn't have a chance at the ball. I don't think it had anything to do with his back either. His health overall has been worrisome for the Brewers. Actually, the first 2 days he missed in that stretch were because of a sore wrist. When he came back, that was okay, and then he played one game and then missed the rest with the back. And the back coming off the surgery in the winter, you know, may be problematic throughout the season. So, you know, here's a guy who's tearing it up, hitting the way they hoped he would, but they can't get him on the field often enough, and that's been a real problem too.
Yeah, agreed. And I know that, you know, he's a guy similar to, say, somebody like Joey Votto in Cincinnati, Jay Bruce in Cincinnati, playing for a struggling club. That's going to be a real appealing player for a contending team come the trade deadline. But if he can't get on the field, then that's problematic, as you said, you know, for the Brewers to try to increase his trade value. But that's another discussion. That's something, you know, looking forward the next month or two. But good to see him on the field yesterday, and hopefully the back issues are a thing of the past for Ryan Braun. Mike, getting to the pitching now, in the opener of that series against the Mets, Willie Peralta took the loss, but I think we can all agree a drastic improvement from his two previous outings, which were both just disastrous. I mean, double-digit hits, you know, too many runs. The ERA was over 7 after those two starts. I think it's 6.99 now, so that's progress, I guess. But, you know, five and two-thirds, 3 runs, struck out a season-high 6, you know, at least for the time being. Did Peralta secure his spot in the rotation? Because I know there's been discussion that, you know what, he might take the Taylor Youngman route and lose his spot.
Yeah, that's a possibility, but I think they're doing everything they possibly can to keep him out there. You know, he's just 2 years removed from winning 17 games and throwing in the upper 90s with sink. He hasn't been anything like that this season so far. Last year was not a good season for him. He was hurt much of the time, but he wasn't tremendously effective. And they had hoped he was going to turn around this season, and the year started out just terribly for the guy. That was a sign of improvement against the Mets. You know, he at least was around the strike zone. He wasn't behind all the time. He's relatively pitch efficient. And, you know, if he can build on that and go forward, they'll be okay. Jimmy Nelson has been good throughout. He's been the number one guy, you know, de facto, because he's been pitching like a number one guy for them. And beyond that, there's been some erratic performances. Jace Anderson was very, very good against the Cubs, you know, taking a no-hitter into the eighth. That was probably the best start of his entire professional life. And Junior Guerra is a total shock, but a pleasant one, you know. So you've got that going on. There's a little more blue sky above these guys than there was a week ago.
Adam, we thank you for the time as always. And let's start off with the ball game Tuesday night at Chase Field in Arizona. Not a boring ball game by any means. A good one for the Pirates. They win it 12-1, but I think that that was kind of the sub-headline to the game, because the main headline was all of the ejections and beanings that we had in the late innings. Gene Segura, unfortunately, hospitalized as the result of a beaning he took from Archimedes Caminero. And Caminero, he's kind of been, in my opinion, kind of a loose cannon for this Pirates team all season. And is there an update on him based on the actions of what happened Tuesday night?
Yeah, the Pirates put him on the 15-day disabled list today with what they said was a left quad strain. I think it's a very conveniently timed injury. Apparently, he told the head athletic trainer after last night's game, when he hit 2 Diamondbacks in the head and got ejected, that the quad had been bothering him for some time, and that he, at that point, felt like it was keeping him from doing his job. But, I mean, I think this may be, like I said, a very conveniently timed injury for the Pirates. Or if you want to call it an injury in this case, something that was able to get him down on the disabled list, get him some time away that he can stop throwing for a little while, because he hasn't been the guy that the Pirates saw last year, the guy that they picked up from the Marlins and turned into a really effective sort of middle relief type. He's completely lost command of the strike zone. Obviously nothing intentional last night against the Diamondbacks, just two balls got away from him, hit Gene Segura in the head with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball. He was hospitalized. My understanding, talking to our friend Steve Gilbert, Diamondbacks reporter, is that he's back. He's not being treated for a concussion, so the Pirates are relieved to hear that news as well. And then a split-finger fastball got away from him and hit Nick Ahmed in the chin. He's still got a seam mark on his chin from where he got hit. So I think it's best for the Pirates. It's best for Caminero, I think, and it's probably at this point best for opposing hitters if he gets some time down, kind of gets to settle down, refine some things, work on his mechanics a little bit, because it got to the point that Clint Hurdle had trouble finding a spot for Caminero to pitch. You know, he tried to use him in low-leverage situations, thinking maybe that was a good opportunity for him to not worry about the game situation, just pitch, try to feel comfortable out there. But even that, those moments were starting to get away from Caminero, and it wasn't doing the Pirates any good to keep running him out there. He wasn't getting any better. So they put him on the disabled list and reworked their bullpen a little bit. I wouldn't expect to see Caminero for a little while. I think he'll spend a couple days down off his feet, not throwing, and then probably a pretty lengthy rehab assignment so he can spend more time working on stuff, because the guy they had last year was really effective, but the guy that he's been this year was really nowhere near that level.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to, you know, be ineffective on the field and to cost your team, you know, ball games, but then to put other players' lives and livelihoods in jeopardy, as Caminero has done, unfortunately, this season, that's a whole other ball of wax. And Adam, as you said, you know, there was obviously no intent on Caminero's part to inflict any sort of injury or do any malice here, but is that opinion shared by the Diamondbacks? I would hope it is, but I mean, is there any conflict of what was intentional or what wasn't?
Yeah, Diamondbacks manager Chip Hale had some pretty strong words after the game last night. He basically said, you know, if it wasn't intentional, then that guy doesn't belong at this level. And you know, Clint Hurdle understood the words that Hale said. He was very fired up. He just seen two of his players get hit in the head. So obviously there's some emotions at play there. And I mean, clearly the Pirates feel the same way. Like, he got ejected after both benches had been warned, even though clearly the pitch wasn't intentional. And Hurdle didn't argue. I think he knew at that point it was best if Caminero was off the mound, just because it was a risk. You know, and they're not going to tell Caminero to stop pitching a certain way, because then that gets even further into his head. And you've already got a guy a little bit worried, because Caminero is a really good guy, good-natured guy. The last thing you would expect someone like him to do is go hit two guys in the head intentionally in any way. So I think the Pirates just felt like it was best for Caminero to get him away from that moment. Weren't going to argue the ejections. Certainly understand where the Diamondbacks are coming from with the concern over him on the mound, but I think both sides can agree that it was not intentional. Whether or not there's still going to be some form of retaliation tonight, I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch, just given the history with these two teams.
Yeah, it certainly will. And, you know, like you said, if you're in Chip Hale's shoes, you can't blame the guy for being emotional and having an emotional response after seeing two of his guys get hit in the head. So certainly understandable where he's coming from. But, again, Clint Hurdle knows that, you know, the Diamondbacks are going to react that way based on what happened. And the best thing for all parties involved, the Pirates and the Diamondbacks and perhaps all the baseball right now, let's be honest, is to shut down Archibedes Caminero for the time being. Let the guy get his head screwed back on straight, and hopefully better things to come after a cooling off period. Now, Adam, obviously we were given a very sobering reminder of just how much damage can be done when a pitch does get away. Ryan Vogelsong, a couple of days ago on Monday, hit in the face by a fastball as he was at the plate. It was the makeup game against the Rockies, the front end of the doubleheader that day. Vogelsong sustaining multiple facial fractures. He was hospitalized, and it was just so terrifying to watch. What is the latest update on Ryan Vogelsong?
Yeah, last we've heard is that he is still in the hospital over at Allegheny General, still hospitalized, still waiting for the swelling to go down. It was really significant around that left eye where he got hit, to the point where they knew there are facial fractures, but the swelling is so severe that they can't really do anything surgically at this point to operate on it until that goes down. They say that his eye was completely swollen shut when he entered the hospital. I think we all probably got a pretty good sense for that when you saw Vogelsong, you know, being carted off the field with a towel over his eye. But apparently it's opened up a little bit. Vision is improving, which is obviously a huge concern when you hear anything about an injury to that area. You first worry about, you know, vision, the eye itself, and then you kind of go down to the bones around the eye, which is apparently where the fractures were sustained. But, yeah, I mean, you talk about sobering. That's something you hate to see for anybody, especially a guy like Vogelsong, who's worked so hard to overcome so much in his career. He got that opportunity to spot start, which Garrett Cole, one of his close friends on the team, said he was just thrilled about. That's why he came here, to be a starting pitcher. So he finally gets out there on the mound. He's pitching well. And then, of all things, he's in the batter's box, you know, looking for an outside pitch, and that one kind of comes up and in on his face and just couldn't get out of the way in time. It's really just an awful moment. anytime you see anything like that happen to anyone, but especially for a guy like Vogelsong, veteran, who's been through all that he has, to be set back like that.